Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Public attention about corporate tax dodgers in the United Kingdom is at an all-time high. In December, a committee of British MPs accused Amazon, Google, and Starbucks of, quote, immoral use of secretive jurisdictions, royalties, and complex company structures to avoid paying tax on British profits. A report released by the Commons Public Accounts Committee calls on the UK government to close loopholes and name and shame companies that fail to pay taxes. Also in December, UK Uncut and women's groups occupied 40 Starbucks coffee shops over tax avoidance over the past 3 years and the impact of government cuts on women. Because of public pressure, Starbucks has agreed to pay $15 million in taxes over the next 2 years in the UK. The group UK Uncut says the amount is too small, but the move is unprecedented. So how has UK Uncut managed to raise so much awareness about corporate tax dodgers? Here in the United States, the issue is rarely mentioned as politicians and the media constantly focus on the deficit and cuts. A 2012 report by Citizens for Tax Justice found that 300 Fortune 500 companies paid an average of just 18% in taxes. That's a little more than half the official rate. 30 companies mentioned in the report, including Wells Fargo, Verizon, Boeing, and General Electric, didn't pay a cent in federal taxes in 2008, 2009, or 2010. And just recently, U.S. PIRG released a report that found that tax havens are costing U.S. states $40 billion a year. But it barely got any attention in the media. So why is this? What can we learn from UK Uncut? That's the topic of today's Your Call as we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series. And we are joined by Liam Thompson, an activist with UK Uncut. They started as a Twitter hashtag, and then they occupied Vodafone's flagship store to demand that the government force them to pay $11 billion in taxes. And just a couple of months later, from a single action, UK Uncut has spread to 55 towns and cities. And Liam Thompson joins us from London. Hi, Liam. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Rose.
It's nice to have you. And we are also joined by Carl Gibson. He's co-founder of U.S. Uncut. This is a nationwide direct action movement that has mobilized tens of thousands of activists to speak out against corporate tax avoidance and budget cuts. Hi, Carl. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, Liam, let me start off with you, because I know you have to leave us in about 15 or so minutes. The Guardian is reporting that public attention about corporate tax dodgers in the United Kingdom is at an all-time high. How do you explain this? It's getting so much attention in the UK.
Yeah, I think it's right for, it's right following what you said at the beginning, that public attention and media attention as well is about the problem of corporate tax avoidance is extremely high in the UK, probably higher than it's ever been. I think the UK Uncut actions have been really one of many really key things pushing towards that, and it's made that happen. And it's basically, I think, the reason for this really widespread anger is the fact that people see that the government's focus on pushing through cuts, unprecedented cuts that are devastating the services, benefits that everyday people rely on. The fact that those are being pushed through so strongly at the same time while this level of corporate tax evasion is going untouched and unconsidered by the government. And unfortunately, that is still the case. In spite of this level of public anger about tax avoidance, the government is still not acting to do anything really very strongly about tax avoidance. They're still focusing much more on taking away the services and the benefits that everyday people rely on. So I think it's the level of anger at this clear inconsistency and this clear unfairness, which is really what has pushed this issue right to the top of the agenda here in the UK.
What are you hearing from members of the public? Because I learned about your campaign about Starbucks. I understand that a number of Brits are also closing down their Amazon accounts to raise awareness about tax avoidance. I recently met a self-described right-wing, pro-business British woman who said that she's involved in these campaigns because she strongly believes that corporations should pay taxes. So it's interesting to hear her call herself a right-winger who's in favor of raising taxes. Can you talk a little bit about just, you know, public opinion about this issue?
Well, since the very first actions we've done, the very first action, as you mentioned, was on London's Oxford Street, which is the main sort of shopping street in London, central London. We occupied a Vodafone store there to protest about the fact that they were successfully dodging £7 million in taxes at the same time as the government was pushing through exactly that same amount in benefit cuts to the welfare of the poorest people in society. So at that first protest, talking to people walking on the street, everyday people, I think it was quite clear that this is an issue that cuts across people of different backgrounds, people with very different political opinions. It's an issue that's clearly unfair and is clear by the government, and that is why, as you say, it's not uncommon to hear right-wingers or people who would normally describe themselves as potentially apolitical, seeing this agenda, seeing the unfairness of it, and seeing that is something that they want to take action about. On the second issue about, as you say, there is a lot of actions happening in the UK which are about boycotts. There's a lot of people have set for to boycott Starbucks, and as you say, there are increasing numbers also suggesting that they're going to close down their Amazon accounts. I think, so UK Uncut's mode of action has always been focused on direct action, on occupying the shops that are accused of tax avoidance, and on other forms of direct action aimed at the government. For example, last year we had a street party in the road outside Nick Clegg, who's our Deputy Prime Minister, outside his house to protest the fact that he was ignoring all of these alternatives to austerity and instead focusing on austerity at all costs. And I think that direct action has been integral to getting the level of media coverage and the level of public interest about this. I mean, the facts of tax avoidance are not new. The fact that there have been so many millions and billions of pounds swept away from the public purse through the immoral and unjust actions of rich companies, that is not new. What's new is that these direct actions have really been successful in getting the message across, getting the message in the media, and getting the message to these companies in a way that they cannot ignore. That the public are angry with them for the way they're behaving, and the public are not going to let them get away with it.
That is Liam Thompson. He's an activist with UK Uncut. In December, they occupied 40 Starbucks coffee shops across the UK to raise awareness about Starbucks' failure to pay taxes for 3 straight years. They also wanted to raise awareness about how this tax avoidance leads to government cuts, which greatly affects women. And because of public pressure, Starbucks agreed to pay $15 million in taxes over the next 2 years. UK Uncut says the amount is too small, but the move is unprecedented. And Liam will be with us for about 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions for him about how they are successfully raising awareness about tax dodgers, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Why do you think this issue doesn't get as much attention here in the United States? You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And Carl Gibson, you're a co-founder of U.S. Uncut, which is the same kind of group but focused on the United States. Why do you think public attention about corporate tax dodgers in the U.K. is at an all-time high? But here in the U.S., as we're talking about deficits and cuts, it rarely gets mentioned.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point. And, you know, first off, it's really great to hear Liam. And, you know, I've been watching from afar UK Uncut, what they've been doing for the last 2 years, part of what inspired me and several others to do something similar here. But what they've been doing is creative direct action, which always gets the goods if you look throughout history. You know, the women's suffrage movement, the civil rights movement. Every time you put lots of people in the streets to raise awareness about something, and people see that it's a diverse coalition of people, and you know, and that they have a reasonable point and they're making it creatively, you know, I think that resonates with lots of people. And you also have to look at the fact that, you know, you contrast that with, you know, here in the U.S., you know, in Britain, they've got, you know, they've got The Guardian, they've got, you know, BBC somewhat, they've got some media that that has, you know, done a fairly good job of telling the whole story. Here in the United States, the media is owned by General Electric and Comcast and all these corporations who don't pay taxes. So the last thing they want the media to talk about is, you know, the fact that their owners don't pay taxes. That being said, though, we've been raising awareness here in the United States about this problem. And as you mentioned, the U.S. PIRG report about, you know, states losing $40 billion a year, these issues are, you know, discussed in a documentary called We're Not Broke, and that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, and it's screened hundreds of times across the U.S., and it's on, you know, Hulu and Netflix, and so there's a film out that's getting awareness out there about the issue, although we have a lot of work to do given that Congress is, you know, really focused on cuts and you know, sequester and all this. So, I think that's where we are right now in the United States.
And Liam, what would you say to U.S. Uncut, and what are your thoughts about Carl's comments responding to the question about why this doesn't get more attention in the United States? Liam, are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, go ahead.
It's a long way across the Atlantic. Yeah. thanks. I think that actually a lot of what Carl says in terms of, or what you and Carl are both saying about government's position actually resonates a lot with the situation here in the UK. The government is not taking any real action on tax avoiders. I mean, the thing that you said, Rose, at the very start of your programme about the fact that a group of MPs have called for naming and shaming of tax budgets. They did call for naming and shaming of tax budgets, but what came out, the way they then named and shamed tax budgets was by publishing a list of 10 small enterprises who had not successfully completed their tax returns and who had dodged who had not paid maybe amounts of around £10,000, £20,000. I mean, these are clearly not the tax avoiders and the tax dodgers that people are really angry about. It's the Starbuckses, it's the Amazons who have billions of pounds to pay on corporate lawyers to dodge the tax that they owe to the public purse at all costs. That's what people are angry about, and those are the tax budgets that the government here is not really taking any action on. So I think that in terms of the approach of our two governments, really we are, unfortunately, in very similar situation with two governments who are willing to push through cuts that are devastating people's lives instead of focusing on tax avoiders. What Carl said about the media, I think, yeah, that is probably very true. I think we are lucky to have papers like The Guardian who are fairly on side and who are willing to do a bit of the work for us in terms of, you know, promoting the news from our direct action and getting that message as across as possible. I think that, I've seen a lot of the actions that US Uncut have done. I think probably my favorite Uncut action of all around the world was probably a US Uncut one in Bank of America, probably 2 years ago in the foyer, and there's a elevator and a song, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing, you know, can be spread through and does spread successfully through social media. It does get the message across. But yeah, I completely think that having a more supportive media does help in the UK.
Well, we've got a call for you, Liam. So let's hear from Mark in Berkeley. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if the guest would address the subject that the European wealthy conservatives are actually taking their lead from the U.S., that the conservatives in Europe actually stand in awe of think that we live with here, you know, the CEO to worker pay ratio, the austerity approach to the economy, reducing the welfare, social welfare contracts like health, and you know, the Wall Street, sort of general freedom to rob practices with the hedge and other types of investment instruments. I wonder if the guests could address some of that. Thank you.
Liam?
So Sorry, could you just repeat a bit of that?
Yeah, Mark was just wondering if the conservatives in Europe are looking at the American politicians when it comes to austerity, the huge gap between what CEOs make and what workers make, the fact that wages are flat here. I mean, are they looking to the U.S. in terms of, you know, what policies do they want to embrace next?
Well, in terms of the UK government, which is a Conservative Party-led government, I think that they are very ready to embrace some of the policies. For example, the changes we're seeing to our national health system, which has for over 50 years been a publicly funded, publicly directed health service for everyone, free at the point of need, has always been the process, the guiding principles behind that, and our government are driving a privatization event agenda through the National Health Service like nothing you've ever seen before. And I think that kind of policy really is reminiscent or is directed by, I know Obama's policy has potentially been in a different direction, but it's definitely directed at trying to go towards a much more privatized and market-driven way to delivering healthcare as you have currently in the United States. So that's an example of where I think, our conservative government is looking towards some of the situations in the U.S. Another example just from this week, we have had the European Union has suggested some legislation which would limit bankers' bonuses for investment bankers. I mean, it wouldn't really limit them. They would still be allowed to completely double their salary through receiving bonuses. So it's still not as strong as what obviously people who are seeing their housing benefits get cut would want. But in spite of that, the Conservative government here is still strongly opposing that and strongly defending the bankers' bonuses and the financial services in the UK. So in those ways, I think, our government is clearly focused on some similar policies potentially to the US, and they're definitely not looking at trying to support some of the more vulnerable and poorer people in the UK as they should be doing. And that's what actions like UK and Cut are all about, trying to push them in that direction, show there are alternatives to this model that they're following.
And Liam, before we let you go, just quick comment on all of the anti-austerity protests that we're seeing across Europe. Just in Madrid a couple of weeks ago, tens of thousands of people took to the streets, and it seems like this is gaining a lot more traction.
Yeah, I think that there is a big movement building, and that's because people in Europe are really angry about what is happening in their countries. In Spain in particular, youth unemployment is at 50%. People are angry about this, and they're angry at the fact that their governments are too focused on protecting the interests of bankers and of an elite rather than serving the needs of the people. So I think that these protests are going to continue to grow. We've seen with UK Uncut, it's continued to grow over a period of over 2 years now, to the extent that, as you said, in December just now, we had our biggest ever day of action with 45 different actions up and down the country. And I think until governments start to see that people are not going to go quietly while they protect the interests of their mates in the bankers, et cetera, and they run these privatization agendas through our public services, people are going to keep protesting, and these protests are just going to keep getting bigger and bigger.
And Liam, we have one more call for you, and then we'll let you go. And thanks for sticking around. Let's hear from Sanchez in Long Beach.
Yeah, hi, Rose. Thanks for taking the call. Liam, congratulations on all the efforts of UK Uncut. I just wanted to, if you could differentiate between your efforts with those of the Occupy movement. What's the difference, and where are you succeeding where perhaps the Occupy has not?
Thank you. Liam, could you hear Sanchez?
Yeah, I could hear that. Okay. Thanks. So I wouldn't necessarily see us as different. Obviously we are different, but I wouldn't see it as a thing of we've succeeded and they haven't. I think that the Occupy movement in Britain, in the UK, was very successful in raising all of the same issues that UK and Cut is trying to raise, in raising the fact that the 99% are being deprioritized at the expense while the government focuses on the 1% instead. And I think that that message came across really clearly. The Occupy camp that happened in London was on the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral, you know, a month or 2 months before the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. So it really did get that a lot of impact for the message that there are alternatives, and for the message that the same kind of messages that UK and Cut have are trying to get across. The differences, I suppose, are in our approach. UK and Cut's approach is, as Carl said, about creative civil disobedience, inclusive civil disobedience that can happen on high streets up and down the country. And that's one thing we've always said is the most important thing, that it can be accessible to people up and down the country. They can go to their local high street and make a stance against what they see as wrong. So that's one distinguishing feature about the UK Uncut movement here. But I think that Occupy has been and still is in the UK a very powerful movement for all the same things that UK Uncut has been pushing for.
All right. Well, Liam, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rose, for having me.
Thank you. That is Liam Thompson. He's an activist with UK Uncut. They successfully occupied 40 Starbucks coffee shops up and down the UK in December to raise awareness about the fact that Starbucks has not paid taxes over the last 3 years. As a result, Starbucks has agreed to pay $15 million in taxes in the next 2 years. UK Uncut says the amount is far too small, but the move is unprecedented. And you can find more about UK Uncut at our website, yourcallradio.org. And again, public attention about corporate tax dodgers in the UK is at an all-time high. And then when you look at the US, where the conversation about cuts and the deficit is happening on a regular basis, you rarely hear about tax dodgers in this country. And we are talking about that with Carl Gibson. He's co-founder of US Uncut. This is a nationwide creative direct action movement that has mobilized tens of thousands of people to speak out on these issues. And actually, we've got another caller who wanted to talk about your website, Carl. So let's go to David in Berkeley. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was wondering how to access on the webpage the directions that U.S. Uncut can facilitate people. I punched in corporate tax, and I got content not found. Now, I'm wondering if I'm at the correct website.
It's usuncut.org.
Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah, it says .com came up.
Okay.
Great.
Well, and let me just ask you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, David.
Yes.
Why do you think these issues don't get that much attention in the U.S.?
Well, a lot of our representatives have conflict of interest, right? And I'm talking tenured people, and so people just feel beguiled by effort. I've always believed shop local, shop small, stay away from the big boxes. It's effective. A lot of people just feel, eh, I'm just another drop in the pool. But it's not true. I'm really glad to hear about usuncut.org, because I was wondering how how personally I could be a little more expansive of my efforts.
Well,
terrific.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I'll get a response from Carl right after the break. You do have very few politicians speaking out on this issue, although the House, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in the House, is speaking out against President Obama's plan to put Social Security and Medicare on the table. That just came out this weekend. They don't get that much attention. You do have people like Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont issuing a report that found CEOs evaded at least $34.5 billion in taxes through more than 600 subsidiaries since 2008. So you do have people like Bernie Sanders speaking out on this. And then we'll talk about some more of the reports. We're also receiving emails about companies like Apple Computer. What are your thoughts on this issue? Why doesn't this get more attention? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Your call on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation with David Kennedy, author of Don't Shoot, One Man, A Street Fellowship, and The End of Violence in Inner City America. He piloted the ceasefire program in Boston, which reduced homicide rates by more than 60%. It's now in effect in more than 70 cities. Critics say it does not address the root causes of violence. So what are your thoughts on solutions to gang violence? Thursday, we'll have a conversation about the U.S. Navy's sonar program and talk about how it's affecting underwater life like whales and dolphins. And be sure, if you're in the Bay Area, to check out the San Francisco Ocean Film Festival. Amazing films and so many great panel discussions. That kicks off on Friday, goes through Sunday at Pier 39. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it's our Agenda for a New Economy series every Tuesday, and we are talking today about tax dodgers and offshore tax havens. We were just joined by Liam Thompson with UK Uncut. Public attention about corporate tax dodgers in the UK is at an all-time high. So why doesn't this get attention in the United States at a time when we're seeing massive budget cuts, governments are strapped? Just last week, U.S. PIRG came out with a report that found that offshore tax havens are costing governments $40 billion. But it didn't get much attention. Why is that? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Do you think that maybe this is you? Do you think that people have similar feelings about their personal taxes as they do about corporate taxes? What are your thoughts on that? We'd love to hear from you. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Carl Gibson, co-founder of U.S. Uncut. They've done many actions over the past couple of years, a huge one at Bank of America a few years ago. And now I would like to welcome Gon Golan to the show. Gon is co-founder of Flip the Debt Campaign. This organization tries to expose how much corporations owe in taxes. It's a response to fix the debt. We talked about this on Friday. This is an organization comprised of the country's richest and most powerful CEOs who are pushing for cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Hi, Gon. Welcome to the show.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. I'd also like to welcome Steve Womhoff. Steve is Legislative Director for Citizens for Tax Justice, a public interest research and advocacy group focusing on tax policies. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So, Steve, I want to start off with you. Your group has been looking at taxes over the past couple of decades. Why do you think the issue of tax dodgers and corporate tax havens gets so little attention in the United States?
Well, I think that sometimes it does get a fair amount of attention, and I think it's going to get more attention as some of the budget cuts that are in effect and going in effect are felt by more Americans. If you remember a while back, there was a New York Times story about GE and how GE was not paying taxes, and that was, you know, huge, huge news. Everybody seemed to be talking about it everywhere you want. The late shows, there were jokes about it, all sorts of things. And I think that, you know, ever since then, people have been picking up on this, and people on the Hill are talking about it. I think that it is a matter of getting over the fear that lawmakers in the U.S. have about taking a stand against corporations, taking a stand against their corporate contributors, to taking a stand against, you know, there might be a corporation in their district that is one of the tax dodgers. So it's always, you know, I think there are a lot of situations where we see from polling that the public believes that corporations need to pay more in taxes, and it's just a matter of time until we sort of drag the politicians along until they get to the point where they see things the way the public sees them.
Because a lot of polls show that about 70% of the public believes that taxes should be raised on the wealthy and corporations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've seen, you know, we've had different kinds of polling. There's polling that just asked the question about you know, wealthy people. You know, do you think that people who make over $250,000 should pay more in taxes, even after the fiscal cliff deal that resulted in higher taxes for some of them? And 2/3 of people said yes. And the other question, another question that I saw in polling that we did recently, there was a question that said, you know, should if we close corporate tax loopholes, should we use that revenue to lower corporate tax rates, which is what President Obama proposes, or should we actually get more revenue from corporations to pay for the things we need to pay for? And, you know, 2/3 of people agreed with the latter statement, that really we should have a corporate tax reform that raises revenue. We don't want to close tax loopholes just to give the money back to the corporations.
And Gon, you're with the group Flip the Debt Campaign. Last month, Flip the Debt crashed a Fix the Debt party at San Anselm's College in New Hampshire, which was hosted by Honeywell CEO David Cote. And he was on President Obama's deficit team a couple of years ago. He's one of the guys who's with the Fix the Debt campaign to try to go after Social Security and Medicare. Can you talk about how your group got started and what your plans are to try to raise awareness about the Fix the Debt groups?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of us are inspired by the work that U.S. Uncut has been doing and U.S. Can Cut, and a lot of us are coming out of the Occupy movement, and we see this very obvious contradiction that's happening, which is that as all these cuts are being pushed onto the American people and we're already paying higher gas prices and higher rent, we're asked to cut the programs that we've paid into, that we rely on, even further, while all of these massive corporations are not only raking in profits, but they're not even paying as many taxes as you are or I am. And that strikes people as inherently unfair. And I think these corporations right now are actually very afraid that people are going to see how obvious that is and start to go after them. And so we're just trying to make that much more visible. And what we did a few weeks ago is there's this famous national debt clock in New York City that this corporation put up next to the IRS building to try and scare us into making cuts by showing how big the national debt is. And we want to flip the debt. We want to flip the argument and say, no, the real problem is your debt to America, how much the top one-tenth of 1% and the wealthiest corporations actually owe America because they've been stealing it from us through tax loopholes and tax cuts. So we're flipping the whole argument and trying to put responsibility for the debt where it really belongs and saying until they start paying their fair share, they shouldn't be talking to anyone else about these austerity cuts or cuts to Social Security and Medicare.
And let's just quickly talk about Honeywell, because Honeywell CEO David Cote was President Obama's deficit commission appointee a few years ago. And I just went on their website and there's a box with David Cote's face that says Fix the Debt. They get a lot of military contracts. What else does Honeywell do?
Well, Honeywell, you know, a lot of these companies are household names. If you look at the thermostat in your house, for example, it might have Honeywell's name on it. But Honeywell is just one of the corporations that's part of this Fix the Debt group that is presenting itself as the reasonable middle ground, the ones who are suggesting that we make these cuts, when in truth they're just a front for major corporations and Wall Street banks. And if you look at the roster of corporations that are part of Fix the Debt, it includes Honeywell, but it also includes General Electric, CEO Jeffrey Immelt, and GE is a massive tax dodger. And a lot of these CEOs are individual tax dodgers as well.
So, and that's the former job czar for President Obama is Jeffrey Immelt. And Steve, your group, Citizens for Tax Justice, put out a report about Honeywell, and it found that over the last 3 years, Honeywell received more than $2.7 billion in defense contracts, reported more than $2.5 billion in pre-tax profits. Thanks to corporate deductions, subsidies, and loopholes, Honeywell claimed $377 million in federal tax refunds. So talk a little bit about what you see with these corporations that don't pay their taxes and have a wide open door to the White House.
Yeah, and just to back up a little bit, we put out this data on what U.S. corporations are paying or not paying, and you can find that at our website at ctj.org. And we have some reports showing exactly like what you're saying. So with Honeywell, for example, we found that between 2008 and 2010 that their effective tax rate, that is the percentage of their profits that they were paying in taxes, was actually negative. They'd actually gotten a refund from refunds from the IRS. They got checks from the IRS instead of paying taxes. This is a huge problem. We found that 30 companies were in this category, and we were looking at most of the Fortune 500 companies that had been profitable over 3 years. This is a huge problem. I think that if you think about it's very striking the way that some politicians have latched on to this idea that there are certain individuals who don't pay federal income taxes because they're too poor to pay federal income taxes. They pay a lot of different other kinds of taxes, a lot of payroll taxes, state and local taxes, and everything like that. But some politicians, and frankly, including Mitt Romney, latched on to this idea that there was something wrong with the fact that certain individuals were too poor to pay federal income taxes. And frankly, we would say, well, you know, these people are paying a lot of taxes, and that's not a problem. But we look at these corporations like Honeywell; they were actually profitable. They weren't companies that were hurting. They weren't companies that were about to file for bankruptcy. They weren't companies that had problems. These were companies that had profits. They were profitable in all of these years, and yet they still were not paying corporate income taxes. And to us, that shows that there's something wrong with the system. And frankly, it's up to Congress to get rid of these loopholes that make this possible.
Right, because at the end of the day, if you want these corporations to pay taxes, Congress has to take action.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely, it's up to the lawmakers to change the rules. And that's not to say that the corporations are not morally responsible for this. I mean, in many ways, the loopholes are things that the corporations lobbied for. I mean, the corporations wrote the tax laws in many sense because they're so intertwined with the legislative process right now, and because their lobbyists are so powerful. But it is up to the lawmakers, and we do need to raise attention about this issue and put pressure on lawmakers to change the situation.
And that is Steve Womhoff, Legislative Director for Citizens for Tax Justice. We're also joined by Gon Golan. He is co-founder of the Flip the Debt campaign. They're trying to expose the Fix the Debt campaign. We're also joined by Carl Gibson, co-founder of U.S. Uncut. And we have full lines right now, but we'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org, or better yet, leave a comment on our website so others can see it at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Paul in Santa Cruz. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Rose. Appreciate the discussion and thanks for taking my call. One of the things that just drives me nuts in this whole history of discussion is the word entitlements has been turned around, because really what we're talking about and everything that's been said is entitlements for the wealthy, for the industrialists, for the bankers, for the financiers that are allowing them to assume that they have access to public resources, public land, even public airways, without having any social responsibility to the rest of us. And it's really, these are entitlements. The other things that they have called entitlements, doesn't it seem like they're the rights that workers and poor people have fought for over a century to earn in the social contract, to get services for the taxes they pay? I mean, they're services and programs. They're not entitlements at all, but nobody's challenging this in the media on a regular basis and turning it around on these guys. It's just so frustrating to hear it this way.
Well, thank you. And you do hear reporters use that word on a regular basis. And Steve, since are you in D.C.?
Yes.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about what just came out this weekend. White House senior economic official Gene Sperling said on State of the Union on CNN that President Obama is going to possibly put Social Security and Medicare on the table as a way out of budget cuts. What are you hearing in D.C. about this?
I'm hearing things like that a lot, and I guess I would say, I mean, The bottom line on these negotiations that are happening right now is that, we have people in Congress who are insisting there can be no revenue raising. That's obviously totally unbalanced. We have the administration saying that they'll raise some revenue. But, you know, even if President Obama got what he wanted, that would still mean that spending cuts, that the total amount of revenue reduction we've done over the last 2 years would rely twice as much on spending cuts as it would on revenue increases. And, you know, you would think that the sort of centrist, moderate position would be, let's do half of our deficit reduction through spending cuts, and let's do half of it through increasing revenue. And if you look, and even if Obama gets his way, that's really not what it's going to be. It's going to be more spending cuts when you put together everything, all the deficit reduction that's been done over the last couple of years. So, and I think because of that, that over-reliance on spending cuts, and that sort of, you know, even though President Obama is talking about raising revenue, he's not quite as strong on the issue as I think he should be. And that's why he has to turned to looking at cutting some things that really should not be cut, cutting programs and cutting public services and public investments that Americans have come to rely on and that really do a good job and should be funded adequately.
Oh, and what do you think about Paul's frustration, and so many people feel this way, about the word entitlement?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, there's so much that the government does for low-income and middle-income people that is measured, and we have all these statistics about how much people get in Social Security benefits, how much is paid out in welfare benefits, but there's all this stuff that the wealthy benefit from that we don't really measure. You know, protection of property is something that helps you if you own all the property, right? I mean, you know, and the sort of stability in the court system that the government provides, that really benefits someone who owns a lot of businesses and can profit and build a fortune in this country. So I do, you know, I think that's why people like me and why most Americans believe that the wealthy can pay a little bit more in taxes as a percentage of their income. That's why we believe in progressive taxes. And when you look at the tax system we have right now, when you add up all the different taxes people pay, the system is really not progressive. The rich are really not paying that much of a much higher of an effective tax rate than other people.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Paul. Let's go next to Rich in Ben Lomond. Hi, Rich.
Yes, good morning. You know, I'd like to talk about Social Security briefly. You know, when you make Social Security payments, that money is on deposit in the Treasury, and it is not owed to anybody. And to take money from Social Security and give it to private bankers is really stealing. And I don't think people realize that Social Security is money that's basically been paid for. And in fact, that money is goes into the system, and it is. To use some people's term, it creates jobs, and it actually stimulates the economy and would do more to reduce the deficit than increase it. And I don't think people really realize that this is Social Security's money already paid for. It's in the bank. And I think that's something that some people don't really realize.
Yeah, well, thank you. We actually are planning to do a show about Social Security in the near future and talk about how the media cover Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So thank you so much for calling in. And I just want to read a couple of emails. Mark says, please address tax rebates where corporations get money on tax day despite paying nothing. Steve, do you want to take that one?
Sure. So in a lot of these situations, you know, I mentioned how our report found that there were 30 corporations that paid nothing between 2008 and 2010. And then we followed up and added another year of data and found that most of them were still paying nothing. So these corporations actually had a negative tax rate, meaning they actually got money from the IRS. In theory, it may be the case that there may be legitimate reasons for a corporation 1 year getting a rebate. So maybe a corporation had losses in a particular year or something like that, and they weren't profitable, and they overpaid the year before, something like that. But what we're looking at is we follow corporations over several years, and when you see a corporation that's been profitable 4 years in a row and it's still paying a negative corporate tax rate, meaning it's still getting a net benefit from the IRS, something is completely wrong with that situation. That means the loopholes are out of control, and it's time for Congress to act.
We also have a few emails from a listener who sent us your reports from the Citizens for Tax Justice, including one that shows 10 companies likeliest to be exploiting offshore tax havens are Qualcomm, Dell, Nike, Apple, and Microsoft. And then there's another report about Apple, how to end Apple's offshore tax shenanigans. And it takes a look at the fact that a repeal of the tax rule that indefinitely exempts offshore profits from U.S. corporate income tax, if those profits were taxable, Apple alone would have paid an additional $17 billion in federal income taxes over the past decade. That would have tripled the federal income taxes that Apple actually paid. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, one of the biggest problems with our corporate, our international tax rules is that U.S. corporations can defer or sort of delay forever paying U.S. taxes on their offshore profits. So what that means is that corporations have this incentive to shift jobs and operations to a lower tax country, or maybe they'll just make their U.S. taxes, sort of dress them up to look like foreign taxes that were earned by some subsidiary company in the Cayman Islands or Bermuda or something like that, somewhere like that, some little country that doesn't have a corporate income tax, really. So, and oftentimes that subsidiary company in the Cayman Islands or Bermuda is really just a post office box, and they're not really doing anything there. So we have the situation where, because the U.S. doesn't tax companies' offshore profits, the companies here have this incentive to make all their profits look like they're offshore profits, even though they're really not. So they engage in all these shenanigans to shift their profits to places like the Cayman Islands. And what's happening is outrageous. Basically, these companies can tell the U.S. that this post office box in Bermuda made all the profits, and because that post office box is in Bermuda and not in the U.S., then the U.S. can't tax those profits. It's really kind of a mess. So we would say that what Congress really needs to do is to eliminate, repeal this rule allowing corporations to defer U.S. taxes on their offshore profits.
And that is Steve Womhoff with Citizens for Tax Justice. And Carl Gibson, co-founder of U.S. Uncut. How do you make these issues palatable to people? How do you get them to focus on these issues?
Yeah, you have to tie it to cuts, you know, and that's what UK Uncut did so brilliantly, and that's what we did when we launched our campaign 2 years ago. And, you know, you look at the fact that, you know, there's been news coming out in Bloomberg and in, you know, HuffPost wrote about it. It's been all over the place about how the five biggest, too big to fail banks, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, JP Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo, get an $83 billion subsidy from the U.S. government every year, which is essentially 3 cents of every tax dollar. Mm. Now, at the same time, the sequester is cutting $85 billion from low-income heating assistance, from food assistance for needy families, you know, from food inspection, from emergency response, you know, things that we need and we depend on, we use every day. And it's almost the same amount that we just give hand over fist to the big banks. You know, so when you make that comparison to people, it gets them to say, oh, That's why there's no money, is because we're giving it to all of them. Huh. You know, and so there's just this really cruel system that Congress is perpetuating, and groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who spend hundreds of millions of dollars to send armies of lobbyists to the House and the Senate to lobby for these tax loopholes, and, you know, contribute to the campaigns of the committee chairman and ranking members for the tax writing committees in Congress. You know, so whenever they have a draft paragraph for a new loophole they'd like to see included in the tax code, it usually just goes right in.
And Gon, same question to you. I think Carl makes a good point in trying to make this, make it sound so that people can say, oh, right, that's why my park is closing. So, for example, this U.S. PIRG report that came out that found tax havens cost state governments $40 billion a year, they point out that that would cover education for more than 3.7 million children for a year. The sum is also roughly equivalent to state and local expenditures on firefighters. They spend about $40 billion a year, or on parks, about $40 billion a year. So it makes it a little more kind of, yeah, this is how it affects my backyard. Gon, are you with us? Did we lose Gon? I think we lost Gon. Steve, what are your thoughts on that? Are we
totally
having Steve?
And in fact, we on our website at ctj.org, we have a couple of reports that lay out various ways that you can close particular corporate tax loopholes or loopholes that benefit the wealthy, and how much revenue you would raise from closing each of those loopholes. So you can figure out, okay, well, we can replace the sequestration for this year by closing this particular loophole, or we could close several loopholes, put these together, and replace the entire sequestration so that we don't have to do any of these budget cuts. We can just raise revenue by closing loopholes and improving the tax system instead.
Well, so here's the one more question, because I often hear people say, you know, I don't want to pay taxes. I think the government does a really bad job of spending the money in the first place. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think, you know, there are a lot of situations where people don't quite realize all the things that the government is doing, right? I mean, it's like the old story about the person who says, you know, during the healthcare reform debate, the person who said, get the government away from my Medicare. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't quite realize that if you show someone a pie chart showing where your tax dollars actually go, almost every slice in that pie is something that people really support. When they finally find something that they want to cut, it's usually such a tiny slice of the pie that they can't even see it. You know, people say, oh, well, I think I like healthcare spending. I like military spending. I like Social Security. I think we should cut foreign aid. And they find out that foreign aid is less than 1% of the total budget, and there isn't really much to cut. And even if you eliminated it, that wouldn't make much of a difference. So I think a lot of it is about educating people about, you know, what the government does. And I think people will realize when they feel the effects of these cuts that are going into effect, just, you know, how important government is.
Yeah, it might be interesting to do a show about this, because when I read comments about stories about taxes, almost every comment talks about foreign aid. People tend to think that the U.S. spends more on foreign aid than almost anything else. It's
right,
interesting.
I mean, sometimes you ask people, you know, how much do you think we should give to foreign aid? And they say, I think it should be about 10% of our budget. Well, you know, it's less than 1% right now, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a few more calls. Let's hear from Ken in San Francisco. Hi, Ken.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking the call.
Thanks.
I'm just an ordinary citizen, and I work three jobs to survive, to pay my mortgage. And one of the reasons why I don't get involved with any of this is because I'm too tired. I'm tired of working, mm-hmm. and I'm tired of figuring out how to pay my bills, and I'm tired about having to deal with banks and their whole method of refusing to do a loan modification. I feel like I've been boxed into a corner,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not able to physically and mentally and emotionally handle it on many different levels.
Yeah, and Ken, I'm sure there are so many people like you just trying to get by and make ends meet. Carl, what are your thoughts on Ken's comments?
Yeah, Ken, I'm really glad you said that. You know, because 2 years ago, February of 11, I was in Jackson, Mississippi, and I was working four part-time jobs. My weekend routine was actually working 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. as a bouncer at a club, then working 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., at a restaurant where I basically slept like 2 hours a weekend.
Wow.
And, you know, and I barely made enough to pay my rent, which is $450 a month. And that's their goal, is what they want you to do is to paralyze you with fear about joblessness, because they know if you get sick and you're uninsured, and if you're unemployed, then you're screwed in this country. And so what they want to try to do is to make us work harder and harder for less and less so they can have more and more. And eventually, you know, they're going to keep bleeding us dry until we decide we don't want to take it anymore and we fight back. And so that's... Yeah, that's what the Occupy movement was about. That's what the UNCUT movement was about. There's a lot of efforts that are going on right now. And so, yeah, much love and much sympathy to you, to you, Ken, because I feel where you're coming from.
Thank you so much. And Carl, just quickly, we've got 10 seconds. U.S. UNCUT is starting a campaign against Bank of America.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to put the call out to action today. We're targeting Bank of America all over the United States on Tax Day, Monday, April 15th. We're going to do similar to what UK Uncut did with Starbucks. We're going to take shelter from the cut.
We'll definitely do a show about that. Carl Gibson is co-founder of US Uncut. Gon Golan is co-founder of the Flip the Debt Campaign. And Steve Womhoff is legislative director with Citizens for Tax Justice. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's the best way to deal with gang violence? On the next Your Call, we'll be joined by David Kennedy, author of Don't Shoot, One Man, A Street Fellowship, and the End of Violence in Inner City America. Kennedy piloted the ceasefire program in Boston, which reduced homicide rates by more than 60%. It's now been implemented in more than 70 cities. But critics say it doesn't address the root causes of violence. So how should communities respond to gang violence? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.